I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You may have seen a spate of articles from avowedly left-wing media publications that claim that the right is trying to create a new boogeyman out of something called critical race theory. This is being framed as attacking a strawman version of anti-racism. So I thought I would address this in a frank manner, using their own sources, to explain what the fundamental and irreconcilable contention that liberal and conservative non-racists have with anti-racists. I will be quoting from the university-approved textbook Critical Race Theory, The Key Writings That Formed the Movement, published in 1995, which has a foreword by Cornel West and was edited by Neil Gotanda, Gary Peller, Kendall Thomas, and Kimberly Crenshaw. Crenshaw is most notable, in my opinion, as the activist who coined the term intersectionality. In the introduction, Crenshaw and crew explain straightforwardly the two shared foundations upon which all variants of critical race theory rest. They say, the first is to understand the regime of white supremacy and its subordination of people of color, which has been created and maintained in America, and in particular, to examine the relationship that the social structure and professed ideals such as the rule of law and equal protection. The second is a desire to not merely understand the vexed bond between law and racial power, but to change it. Note what has been presupposed here, that there is a regime of white supremacy in the United States and that critical race theory is a method by which it can be overthrown. This is a counter-revolution against the American Revolution of 1776 that views the laws and constitution of the United States to be a white project because it is an intellectual development of England. This is why the movement spawned the 1619 Project, the date of the landing of the first black slaves in the English colonies, and is not the foundation of the ideological revolution that created the American Republic. Critical race theorists accept that the Republic of the United States is colorblind and has an essentially negative view of race and uses Dr. King's injunction of judging people by their character instead of their race. They also know that, and as they say, the deepest elements of mainstream civil rights ideology view race consciousness as the very root and essence of racism itself. But nevertheless, as they say, with its explicit embrace of race consciousness, critical race theory aims to re-examine the terms by which race and racism have been negotiated in American consciousness, and to recover and revitalize the radical tradition of race consciousness among African Americans and other peoples of color, a tradition that was discarded when integration, assimilation, and the ideal of colorblindness became the official norms of racial enlightenment. They don't like the non-racist nature of the United States and seek to actively overthrow it with their activism and replace it with overt racial consciousness. The non-racial nature of the United States is itself considered to be a form of race consciousness, and they call it whiteness. Therefore, in the paradigm of the critical race theorist, upholding the Constitution of the United States and the institutions by which it is run is itself considered to be white supremacy, and the very identity of American, of course, becomes synonymous with the identity white. They also argue that the common law nature of the US legal system is in of itself a manifestation of white supremacy. It is, of course, not white in any meaningful sense of the word. Almost all other European countries do not use English common law. In fact, if one looks at a map of countries around the world that do use the common law, one will notice that it looks very much like a map of the British Empire. Because common law is derived from judicial decisions of courts, rather than statutes, applying the principles of past cases to the current case. And this stands in contrast to civil law, which is judicial authorities that use a civil code created by legislatures to evaluate cases and reach their decisions. This draws the distinction between the inherited tradition of law and the top-down authority of law, and so it should be no surprise that the critical race theorists evolved out of critical legal theory. As Crenshaw and co. explained to us, a predominantly white left emerged on the law school scene in the late 70s, a development which played a central role in the genesis of critical race theory. Organized by a collection of neo-Marxist intellectuals, former New Left activists, ex-counterculturalists and other varieties of oppositionists in law schools, the Conference on Critical Legal Studies established itself as a network of openly leftist law teachers, students and practitioners committed to exposing and challenging the ways American law served to legitimize an oppressive social order. We are left with the understanding that the followers of continental philosophies, such as Marxism, have found themselves butting up against the Anglo philosophies of law and governance. From this activist legal scholarship arose a group of non-white academics led by Derek Bell, who called themselves the Race Crits, who taught legal doctrine from a race-conscious viewpoint, and who viewed, as they say, American law through the prism of race. The Race Crits rejected critical legal theory for being white. This led to the founding of what was called the Alternative Course in the 1980s, where Bell's book Race, Racism, and American Law became the foundational text, and is pointed to in this as the genesis of critical race theory. Though they were followers of Marx, they also derided what they considered to be vulgar Marxism, for its lack of attentiveness towards capitalist ideology, and for failing to see how law constructed race in the United States. And so finally, we can see exactly what we are dealing with. Critical race theory indicates how and why contemporary jurisprudence of colorblindness is not only the expression of a particular color consciousness, but the product of a deeply politicized choice. The deeply politicized choice here is one that cuts against the Marxists who support critical race theory and in favor of those people who support a non-racial liberal democracy. To reverse this and politicize racial categories such as black, however, has consequences. You may have seen the term black being capitalized in news stories, whereas white never is. Black with a capital B became a political identity, as if it were its own nationality, and blacks in America are not actually American. This, for anyone who is opposed to race politics, is a very bad development. As pointed out by the Columbia Journalism Review, this is the deliberate racialization of politics. As they say, black reflects a shared sense of identity and community. White carries a different set of meanings. Capitalizing the word in this context risks following the lead of white supremacists. They are well aware that they are opening the door to white racial politics, and whiteness studies scholar Robin DiAngelo recognizes the vacuum and tries to head it off before it develops a life of its own. She wishes to fill the identity of white with content that is entirely negative. As she says in her wildly popular book, White Fragility, a positive white identity is an impossible goal. White identity is inherently racist. White people do not exist outside of the system of white supremacy, and her solution is to try and be less white. Whatever that could mean. Alt-right activist Richard Spencer is the flip side of this coin, attempting to fill this constructed white identity with content that is entirely positive. And what the critical race theorists are trying to do here is create a political environment based on race, in which only one side is allowed to participate and the other side is openly demonized. Even if there was nothing else repugnant about creating politicized black supremacy, this violates the basic moral rules of fairness. However, it seems that most Americans do not want politicized racial identity politics and would prefer a return to party politics, the politics of self-association. Liberals and conservatives should consider racial politics to be beyond the pale, a repulsive attempt by neo-Marxists to further corrode democracy and create an unfair playing field by which they can amass power to themselves on the basis of their race and not of their merit. Critical race theory should be rejected in its entirety as the self-conscious attempt to overthrow the American Republic that it is. If you'd like to know more about this, from a non-leftist perspective, in the description you will find a link to an essay and speech I gave at the German Parliament called The Conservatives' Guide to White Fragility, which is available exclusively on lotusseeds.com.